There's a very common sense reason gold is pushing to all-time highs right now. Actually, there are several reasons. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. Since Jan 21, the cost of living is up 17.9%. The national debt continues to skyrocket, now above $34 trillion, causing many to worry when the House of Cards will come crashing down. A presidential election year that'll have massive implications on the future of this country. All of this adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that's why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. Text STRANGE to 989898 and get your free info kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold, too. Just text STRANGE to 989898 to claim your free info kit and to protect your savings from uncertainty today. In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's medical emergency kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
We're all familiar with ghosts. We're familiar with haunted houses. What happens when the house is the ghost? There is a spectral mansion that has been reported in an area of Suffolk, just northeast of London, for the last 150 years by dozens of witnesses. This grand red brick Georgian manor suddenly appears in a wheat field and then simply vanishes. And we're going to discuss that over the next 45 minutes or so. Jim Burchell is a newspaper editor, podcaster, journalist from New Zealand. He maintains an interest in unexplained phenomena. His podcast, Occam's Razor, explores the paranormal and the world's greatest mysteries with the aid of learned guests. He's recently embarked on a trip to the UK to document the mystery of the Ruffham Disappearing House for his YouTube channel, Unexplained Cases, which has also been featured on BBC Radio. He became acquainted with the UK-based documentary filmmaker Simon Nunn, who has spent the last few years interviewing people connected to the Ruffham House sightings. And also joining us, Simon Nunn is a distinguished filmmaker, founder of UFOinsider.news, based in Norfolk in the UK. His work has garnered acclaim for his exploration of landscapes and cosmic mysteries in award-winning films showcased at renowned global festivals, including the British Film Institute, South Bank, and the Hong Kong Film Festival. Beyond cinema, Nunn's innovative approach, recognized with prestigious awards such as the National Lottery Heritage Funding and from the Emergent Arts Space in San Francisco, extends to unraveling UFO secrets. His upcoming film, The Grove, set for release this year, promises to captivate audiences with a deep dive into the mysterious reports surrounding a phantom house in an English village. All right, Jim Burchell and Simon Nunn, welcome to you both. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us on, Richard.
So first of all, let's get a quick geography lesson. Suffolk, England, northeast of London. Just kind of describe the terrain and some of the local villages and hamlets in the area.
Well, it's near Cambridge, so it's the county east from Cambridge. Everyone knows Cambridge, right?
Yes.
No one knows Suffolk. And it's outside of a town called Bury St. Edmunds, which is a small market town. The landscape is very, very flat and expansive. It kind of reminds me of like Midwest, you know, that kind of incredibly flat, open skies, Right. Loads of wheat fields. It's an agricultural kind of landscape. There's still just like little hamlets of thatched roof cottages everywhere. It's your kind of scenic image of village, kind of English village life.
Right. So, and Bury St. Edmunds, there's an abbey there that's been, that was built, in the Middle Ages. There's quite a history there revolving around the namesake, St. Edmunds. He was martyred, I understand.
He was slaughtered by the Danes in 852, I believe. Just outside of Bury St. Edmunds. And I think there's a potential link. It's actually near Ruffham, actually, where this beheading actually happened, where he refused to renounce his faith to the Danes repeatedly. But yeah, that's where the name comes from. But there's a huge abbey. There's so much history from the town. A lot of the witch trials happened in Bury St. Edmunds, and then they were taken over to Salem, and then they kind of like used the same kind of trials and like methods of interrogation, so to speak, over in Salem. It's quite, I mean, Jim, you went there, I met you there, but it was quite a spooky place, wasn't it? I mean,
it was certainly a town that, I came up from London. I got on a train from St. Pancras Station. I was visiting from New Zealand, ostensibly on holiday, but obviously the Ruffham House was front of mind. So I caught the train up there, and when I jumped out the station, it's just a town with it's an old town. It's got, old streets. It's got that imprint. It's a little bit spooky is probably the best way to put it. It's got an unusual vibe in the air. Well, something that I picked up on anyway. It's, a place that's certainly been around a long time.
Describe that. Can you describe that vibe? That, is it an energy? Does it affect your, does it give you a physical sensation?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I stepped off, the way I would sort of describe it, I suppose, in Auckland, where I live in New Zealand, we have a thing called the Auckland Hum, which is, a phenomenon that's shown up all around the world, where people feel a low-frequency hum. Yeah, not everyone can hear it, not everyone can feel it. I suppose a similar vibe would be that I picked up on in Bury was the hum. Stepping off the train, it's just... I don't know if it's anything to do with infrasound. If you've ever been exposed to that, the slight feeling of unease you might get when you go into, building of historical significance or a place or something like that. Probably the best way to describe it anyway. Whether that was mixed in with my anticipation or slight anxiety at going to a site that reportedly has a disappearing phantom mansion.
Simon, do you feel that... that vibration or hum or vibe as well?
Yeah, I do at the actual location. of where the house has been seen. I mean, there is an atmosphere in the town, Bury St Edmunds itself. It's because a lot of, like I was saying, that area of England, it's quite untouched as well, because there's no like motorways in the eastern regions. So everything is a kind of still decades behind. Do you know what I mean? It's that slow yep. pace of life. It's kind of remained there. And I think that adds to the atmosphere, really. But also, I don't know if you're familiar with ley lines,
yes.
the theory
oh, yes.
of like energy lines.
Yeah.
There's two main ones in England that run from Land's End to Norfolk. I think it's Hopton-on-Sea. And both of them interweave through Bury St Edmunds, and they cross over near the Abbey, actually. And I think that you know, that does add something, personally, I think. There is some sort of,
Ley lines, some call them dragon lines. Can you maybe explain what ley lines are actually?
So I think the term was coined by Alfred Watkins in his famous book about ley lines. I think it was in the 40s that he wrote it. I can't remember off the top of my head. But it's the idea that there's energy currents under the earth that have been here for thousands of years, and they're lined up by monuments throughout the country, throughout the world. So, for example, in the UK, it's like Stonehenge to different, you know, sacred churches or pagan sites coincidentally are lined up, and there is that energy current going along following it. And just so coincidentally, Bury St Edmunds Abbey is on one, essentially.
Interesting. Before we get to the Mirage Mansion in Wrotham, also connected to Bury St Edmunds, I believe, reports that go back maybe, I don't know, centuries of headless horsemen, specters of monks roaming around. What can you tell me about those reports?
Oh God, yeah, there's so many reports of ghosts in and around Bury St Edmunds. It is like a hotspot, really, for this kind of activity. And maybe that is because of these potential energy lines. But yeah, I mean, around the Abbey, there's headless monks that have been seen in the graveyard. I actually took Jim there as well. Even in the daytime, it's just very atmospheric and spooky. I mean, it's hundreds of gravestones and a couple of little paths winding around, and then loads of trees and overgrowth. You know, carriages, funeral processions as well. People have seen like ghost funeral processions going through. Yeah, all sorts.
There's still a gurney in the Abbey that was used to transport bodies, I understand.
That's right, and some churches still have the original ones in the church, but you know, they now, you know, just have a charity box on them or something for people to use, or leaflets on. But the actual original gurneys are still in churches to this day, which is a bit questionable, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, they're still functioning, but for a different reason.
All right. So, where is the Abbey in relation to this wheat field where the spectral mansion is seen?
It's about 2 miles, 2 to 3 miles from the Abbey to Wrotham, probably about northeast from the location. I think it's about 2 miles. Yeah.
And this little plot of land, this wheat field. Is it still farmed? It's an active.
Yep, it's still active. As far as I'm aware, the Agnew family own the land, and it's very much in use every year, and it is primarily used for wheat. Other than, you know, the odd dog walker, not much activity is on it, essentially, which is quite strange. I mean, it's quite a mundane field. It's very normal, but it has this large history of sightings.
Going back about 150 years, Jim or Simon, whoever wants to jump in on this one, just maybe explain the history of the sightings themselves, how far back they go, where do we find the record of these sightings?
Do you want to take it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, over about the last 150 years, it's kind of been the documented sightings, ones that, you know, have been written up by local media and stuff. The Bury St Edmunds record office holds quite a thick sort of file just of newspaper clippings, and that's just sort of sightings of the Ruffham house that have made the local paper, so to speak. Obviously, local anecdotes are probably boosting these numbers as well. It just seemed every corner we turned, or every time I kind of advertised for information through the local community page and stuff like that, someone would come forward with an anecdote, either that seen the apparition themselves or a member of their family, or perhaps that had some knowledge passed down from someone in their family. Simon, I think might be pertinent to mention the local pub. Simon went, or he can probably pick up the story, but he went to the local pub on occasion because he was staying in the area, sort of conducting investigations, etc. And he bumped into some locals that knew all about it, and some that were more sharing information readily about their sightings, and others that preferred to keep it sort of quiet until you know, they sussed you out a little bit. Is that the best way to put it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's been quite challenging, the whole process of trying to make a film really about this subject, because a lot of people want to talk about it, but no one wants to appear on camera or, you know, even be recorded in any capacity to talk about it. But they're happy to discuss it, which has been really difficult, which I think makes the case of these, you know, witnesses more, I don't know, truthful in a way, because yeah, they are a bit more reserved in a way. Like, they're not wanting to get fame or some sort of, you know.
Yeah, that's the credibility, for sure.
But yes, so, I mean, the ones that Jim was mentioning, yeah, I stayed at the, it's called the Bennett's Arms. It's the local pub in Ruffham, and it's only, it's about a 15-minute walk from where the actual house has been seen. And I spent 2 weeks camping behind the pub for my initial research and filming. And, you know, I met so many of the, like, village characters on a day-to-day basis and kind of got to, you know a few of them. But there was two really old guys. I don't even know if they're alive today. They were probably in their 80s when I met them. And one was quite a character, very loud, very opinionated. And he kept trying to shut me down and be like, oh, it's just drunk people, it's silly, it doesn't exist, you know, a real skeptic type. But his mate was a bit quieter, and people had told me he had actually seen it. But I managed to get him by himself, and, you know, I bought him a couple of drinks. And, yeah, he claimed to have actually seen it twice. The first time he saw it, he thought they were building on the field, because he had a little Jack Russell dog, which is a little terrier type. And he walked on that field every day for 15 years, and claimed to see it twice in those 15 years, which is quite fascinating. But coincidentally, it turned out later that the guy that is this huge skeptic had actually seen the house himself when he was walking home one night from the pub. So he then thinks everyone's drunk who sees it, and it's just some sort of like hallucination because of it. But I thought that was quite fascinating.
So the description of the house, going back to the earliest sightings some century and a half ago, are they fairly consistent?
I would say 90% of them are consistent. In my research, yeah, it's a red brick Georgian mansion, two or three stories, big white columns at the front, big iron gates that are surrounding the actual, you know, house itself, driveway. The only inconsistency is one person has seen it on a field opposite, which I don't really know what to make of that. The person that, you know, says that they saw it on the opposite field could have been a bit confused. I mean, they are a bit elderly. It was a very long time ago that they saw it, so maybe, you know, they were on the other side of the, you know, the car, passenger side, whatever. But yeah, 90%, it's all the same. And all the people, that they don't know each other. Do you know what I mean? It's not just people in the village seeing it, it's people that don't even live in Bury St Edmunds or Suffolk have seen it. And it just so happens to be that when someone says, hey, has anyone seen this house, that, you know, people are like, oh my God, yeah. Or like they start looking into it themselves. And it's, yeah, I find that quite credible in my opinion.
We'll take a quick time out. Simon Nunn, Jim Burchell are here investigating the Ruffham ghost house, this spectral mansion appearing in a wheat field just northeast of London. Back with more of our conversation right after these.
As you're staring up at the night sky, ever wonder who's staring back? You're listening to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
And we are back. Simon Nunn is with us, distinguished filmmaker, founder of UFOinsider.news, based in Norfolk in the UK. Jim Burchell, newspaper editor, podcast journalist from New Zealand, and the link to Unexplained Cases on YouTube and Occam's Razor, the podcast, are in the episode notes. Simon, your upcoming film is titled The Grove. The Grove, tell us about The Grove. This is the tree sort of lined area. So is it adjacent to or surrounding this wheat field?
So the wheat field, yeah, it surrounds this tiny little grove. It was formerly called Colville's Wood. So I just will say now, if any listeners are interested, there's a giant report that details the history of everything and potential answers to this phenomenon by a guy called Carl Grove. And he helped me a lot through my research in the film. But yeah, it used to be called Colville's Grove, which was a former landowner of the land. And yeah, that is, it's a very eerie place. Anyone that I've taken there doesn't like it. Even people I've told, you know, I haven't told them like, oh, there's a haunting here. It's just, you know, sometimes it's nice to go for a little country walk. But everyone reports feeling at unease. I think, Jim, you mentioned infrasound before, and, you know, I did go there fairly recently with a device to try and capture any sort of signal of infrasound, and I didn't, which is interesting, even though there are pylons of electricity over the actual wood, which could maybe, you know, signify some sort of electrical activity or, like, messing with energy lines. But, yeah, the wood is... it's strange. It's mixed of all sorts of different types of trees as well, from all ages. What were your thoughts, Jim, when we took you there?
It's I mean, the plantings of specifically oak trees has certainly looked deliberate amongst the sort of other species that are in the grove, as it were. Reports concerning the house. There was a lot of investigation, obviously, done by Carl Grove, hands on, you know. Feet on the ground in terms of determining reports of whether a house once stood on the site. And there was some symmetry that we kind of observed in terms of the trees, but there was nothing particularly definite in terms of a tree line kind of driveway that would lead up to an opulent mansion that was perhaps there in the past. But certainly the oak trees within the grove look out of place with the rest of it. You know, it's probably a misnomer to say they've been deliberately planted, because a lot of trees are, but it's just the alignment of the trees and the symmetry is unusual. And it leads you to sort of think there could have been something on that site at some point. Unfortunately, historical data or planning data and stuff like that doesn't really seem to line up with that. There is, Simon might be able to go a bit more in depth about this, but there is some sort of mounds of soil, isn't there, that within the grove that Carl sort of identified that perhaps could, you know, have be some evidence of something formerly constructed, you know, had been buried or covered up or something like that there. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, when I took you there, we did notice that there is, I think it was a former pond or well, because there's a definite kind of groove where, yeah, it looks like some sort of water source used to be there. where a lot of the trees are, I think they're pine as well, which, you know, they're grown to just be cut down and just used for the estate. And they can take 30, 50 years to reach absolute maximum maturity. But there are trees interwoven with those that are placed in certain areas, which are hundreds of years old, like you said, those oak trees. And there is some sort of marker potential, I think, for a house to have been there. I mean, I've been told by people in the village that they've heard that there was a house that, that existed in that woodland. There was one old guy called Phil Sage who, when I interviewed him, he's in his late 90s. He used to be a gameskeeper. And yeah, he said he found foundations of a house in the wood. And there were still raspberry canes and blackberry bushes growing, indicating some sort of domestic existence in the house, which is quite fascinating. He did even claim that there was a map with a coat of arms over the wood, which would signify, you know, a house of X, Y, and Z that used to live there.
But the house, but the foundation, he said, was in the grove, not in the wheat field.
Yeah, was in the grove. Mm. So that's also kind of fascinating, that the fact that it's been seen in the field, not in the wood. And everyone's, you know, the kind of theories that go around is that it is some sort of mirage. But I think, Jim, you could kind of back me up here that it's just not the landscape for it. There's too many hedgerows. No. There's too many woodlands. There's not, it's expansive, but there's not enough to actually channel projection of a mirage in that specific location as well, continuously. And the fact that it's been seen at night, as well as in the daytime, which is, yeah, bizarre.
Yeah, well, I had an anecdote emailed to me by a woman who's an academic, is probably the best way to describe it, very learned, very, you know, thorough in her description of what she saw. And she described seeing the house illuminated possibly by candlelight at night. And she went back on a separate occasion to see the house as she'd never seen it before, etc. And surprise, surprise, it was gone. So it is something that manifests, you know, all times of the day. So I suppose to use the word mirage is probably the best word that we can find for it. I prefer to kind of call it an apparition because I think that's more what it is, some sort of replay of the past. Simon and I have butted heads on what we actually think it is. I sort of put forward the theory of some sort of you know, time slip, or, you know, something that was imprinted in the fabric and the environment being replayed or manifested, perhaps with the aid of the power pylon. Yeah, but the mirage side of it is probably thrown out the window a little bit, as Simon says, by the fact that it has been seen at nighttime as well. And I think, Simon, correct me if I'm wrong, some of the patrons from the local pub, there might have been a report of someone seeing it at nighttime, sort of when they were heading home as well. So it's a curious phenomena. It's certainly something I'd never heard of. You know, we've all heard of ghosts and apparitions and the stone tape theory and this sort of thing. For it to apply to a whole mansion is rare in terms of paranormal reports and stuff like that, which sort of has me leaning towards a sort of time slip theory. You know, your kind of Versailles, you know, kind of setup. And interestingly enough, not too far from the location, well, about 30 miles or so, I think, is a town called Kersey, which was involved in a very famous time slip kind of incident where three Navy recruits, I think it was in the 50s or 60s, some might correct me, that sort of went to the town and doing some exercise, some sort of orienteering, and basically they were transported back in time and they saw shops that were, you know, completely out of date, and, you know, street lamps and, you know, things that didn't fit with the era that they were living in, certainly. And that was pretty well documented, that case. So there's definitely something in the air in the area. What it is, it's to be determined. So that was one of the reasons that, you know, piqued my interest, just because it was so different. And I headed up there and, Yeah, that's kind of the theory that I favour, but Simon, I know, has a different outlook on things.
Well, I'm actually coming around to it.
Are you?
Yeah, I am actually. Yeah, the more I've been thinking about it, I think that is probably the best so far. Because, yeah, I mean, I don't know, I do struggle with it because obviously I think I explained to you about the idea that if it was a time slip, there should be more in the surrounding area that changes, that people notice, not just a house in a field. And, you know,
yeah,
the road might change, or like they might see a horse and car, or like people wearing different attire. Do you know what I mean? There needs to be a little bit more. But the fact that, yeah, it's night and day, it doesn't matter what season it is, spring, summer, winter, autumn, winter. It's been seen in every occasion. And I mean, the example you gave, the academic, that was 2018, wasn't it, that she saw it, or 2019?
It was fairly recent.
Yeah, and you know, in our modern day and age, people are still seeing it, which is absolutely wild.
People report hearing kind of a whooshing sound when it appears in some instances.
Yeah. So I think about 5 of the people that I've spoken to have claimed to hear a noise preceding the house appearing. A couple of them is also the weather has been a bit, you know, foggy, misty. It's kind of, you know, the kind of typical ghost story atmosphere, but you know, it's a kind of like a droning, whooshing sound. I guess similar to like a humming noise in a way, but like a strong wind, I think Phil described it. And then it's kind of appeared. But then again, a lot of the sightings have been seen during people just driving in their car. It's not like they're walking about, because most people drive these days, especially in that area. But yeah, I mean, sorry, go on.
Have either of you seen it?
No,
unfortunately.
All right, we'll take another time out. Simon Nunn, Jim Birchall stays with us as we continue to discuss the Ruffham Ghost House. Back with more in a moment.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Jim Birchall stays with us, newspaper editor, podcaster, journalist from New Zealand, Simon Nunn, filmmaker, founder of UFOinsider.news. He's joining us from Norfolk in the United Kingdom, and we are talking about the Ruffham Ghost House, or some call it a mirage, others suggest it is some sort of a time slip, that we're able to see this grand red-bricked Georgian manor in a small village just northeast of London. And you featured an eyewitness, Jean Battram, I believe her name is, a woman in her 80s. I think she was in your report, Jim, that was posted on your YouTube channel. Tell us about Jean's experience with the Ruffham House.
Well, yes, Simon's actually alluded to it earlier when he mentioned, Jean's case is unique in the sense that she saw the apparition on the opposite side of the road. That's what he was speaking about earlier. I interviewed her when I went up August or so. And Simon and Carl Grove, who'd done all the pioneering work that we've been referring to, had interviewed her at some length as well. So her take on things was certainly unique. I mean, the whole situation, the whole phenomenon is unique, but her seeing it on the opposite side of the street was one out of the box. So whether that came from, as Simon said, confusion over where she initially saw it, you know, was she a passenger in a vehicle? Was she driving the vehicle? I would have to go back in my notes just to have a look at that. But Simon might be able to shed some light just on her experience and why it sort of resonated so much with us. It's just because it's different from the rest of them, and the location had changed.
Right. She'd never been there in that area before. And I believe she was in the car with her husband who was driving, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
On King Towns Hall.
Yep.
When she saw this, and her husband didn't see it because I guess he was focused on driving.
Yeah. And I don't think he, she made a note of it because she does live locally. I visited her house and it's only sort of a mile or two, I think, from the Ruffham site, but she made mention that she didn't usually travel that way. It wasn't a way she didn't always have to travel, but having said that, she'd lived there long enough that she was familiar with her surrounds, and something like that, given the opulent nature or the reports of how opulent the house is, with something that would stick in her memory, and in fact did. And she's recounted the story a number of times, so it's, you know, it's, I won't say well-worn, but she certainly, you know, got all her facts in order and ducks in a row in terms of what she saw. And yeah, and she's you know, even with a slightly advanced age, she's sharp of mind. You know, it's not something that, she's not someone you would accuse of sort of having an old memory that's conjured up, you know, and things have been distorted or anything like that. She's pretty clear on what she saw and the facts and time and that sort of thing. So,
and she described it as she thought it was a brand new house, right? She described it as a new build, I think was the term she used.
She did, yeah. I mean, whether that was because she just hadn't seen anything and she was, you know, her mind was putting one and one together and saying, oh, they've, you know, built something on this land now, was something that I asked her, and she said, yeah, in her opinion, it was kind of something that was brand new, which was even stranger as part of
it. I mean, yeah, that makes it more interesting as well, I think, because if it's a new build, because there's a lot of these flat pack houses that you can buy for cheap and then kind of build them yourself, and you can get them, I think, in Georgian style. And I think that kind of might allude to the fact that I don't know, as a new theory, that actually people are seeing something in the future rather than in the past as like a time slip, that actually maybe in 5, 20, 30 years, a Georgian new style house will appear on that field, and maybe that field will be sold off. We don't know. I mean, that's an idea which I was kind of drawn to lately to explain this phenomena, because that there's a historic relevance to similar stories, I think.
That would explain
if it's into the future.
Yeah, that would explain if it is a time slip, why people aren't seeing other old buildings appear suddenly in farmers' fields and so forth. That this is a glimpse into the future. She also, Jean, did mentioned the one of the gentlemen that you ran into, Simon, at the pub, the older gentleman with the Jack Russell Terrier, and she corroborated the story, your story.
Yeah, that's right. She was out with a friend putting flyers up for her friend's cat ran off, and they were just putting flyers out, and they bumped into this gentleman, and she just said to him, "Oh, we're right by where the Rough Mansion appears," and he was like, "Oh, right, yeah, I've seen that twice," and you know, told the whole story, and you know, that was a really important moment for Jean, because that was the first time, I guess, it felt validating for her that someone else had seen it, and like she wasn't just losing her mind, and her friend was with her and actually started to believe her then. I think that is quite a nice moment for her.
So what's next in this investigation? Can you get permission from the owner of this plot of land, the farmer, to, I don't know, do some sort of an excavation? Obviously, you know, when when wheat is not in season, but so you're not disrupting the crop. But what's next?
I mean, I'm in a dialogue with the Agnew estate at the moment about potentially doing something like that. But as you pointed out, it has to be in a year where they're not going to be actually active on it. And obviously they don't want to lose money, etc. But we're in dialogue at the moment to do this, because I think it would be incredibly interesting to do it in the grove as well as the field. And if we can get onto the other side as well, where Jean had seen it, just to kind of rule out any kind of, potentiality of finding a structure or foundations, that would be great. That's kind of where I'm at the moment, is just to get that sorted. Like I mentioned, I did do some infrasound recordings just to try and get a signal, and that wasn't so successful. But I mean, that rules out that, you know, that is
right.
That's
right. No people or animals have ever been seen as part of this apparition?
No, not usually. Actually, I was just thinking, there was one lady that I spoke with last year, and she saw it as a little girl in the 1990s. She was with a group of friends just biking about Rougham, and they saw the house, and she claims to have seen a little girl in the window.
Interesting.
That's the only person that I've spoken with who claims to have seen someone in the house. Usually it's just completely empty.
All right. Go ahead, Jim.
Sorry. And just in terms of activity within the house, I alluded to earlier the report from the academic lady, for lack of a better term, who mentioned candlelight and stuff like
that
inside. But the rest of the reports pretty much, you know, just detail the house, etc. Whether that's because people, you know, perhaps didn't pay as much attention to the finer details, you know, whether there was someone inside, that sort of carry on. Her testimony was a bit different in the sense that she, as I said, described candle-like sort of a glow, is the way she put it. She didn't say unearthly or anything like that. She just seemed like she said there could have been a social event going on inside. She didn't mention any sound or anything like that, but there certainly gave the impression that the house was lit up because there was people inside. So aside from the sighting that Simon just mentioned, there hasn't been any people or animals or anything like that. Just the structure at this point. But
I think it's just worth maybe reiterating that the fact that most of these reports, it's people driving in their car. They're not necessarily from the area or even know the area. They might even get lost and they see this house, and it's not just a normal house. It's an exquisite, beautiful manor house, which makes people make a mental note to go, you know, oh, I want to come back and see that again, or maybe research into it and see who lives there. Maybe ask local people about it. And when they do, they find out it doesn't exist, which is,
it's an incredible story, an incredible mystery. And I look forward to the release of your film, your upcoming film, The Grove. Simon, where can we get more information, or how do we, you know, sort of keep up to date with the progress of the film?
For any updates and progress, just go on to my website, simonnunn.com, and it will be up on there in springtime.
All right. And Jim, what's coming up on the YouTube channel, Unexplained Cases, and the podcast, Occam's Razor?
So Unexplained Cases, I'm at the moment piecing together some footage of other kind of paranormal events that I made an interesting recording at Temple Church in London when I was over there, quite by accident. I set up a 3-second establishing shot outside. This is the church, if people are familiar with the Da Vinci Code and so forth. It's in the Inner Temple in London there. And I picked up a strange audio phenomenon of footsteps that definitely sounded inside, and a strange kind of cackle. Quite by accident. So I'm putting together a video just on that, and another one that includes some stories from a place called the Queen's House, which is in Greenwich in the UK, which sits smack bang in the middle of the Meridian Line, runs pretty much through the house there through to the Naval College. And there's talk of ghost of a dwarf, actually, who was tied in with the ruling monarch at the time. So I'm putting together something like that, for lack of a better term, kind of Ghosts of London sort of style sort of thing. I just picked up, you know, a lot of audio and video and stuff over there that I'm piecing together. So that's next on the list. And hopefully I'll head back to the UK in the New Zealand winter, so sort of July, somewhere around there, and meet up with Simon and do some more digging around the Rougham House, and hopefully document something pretty impressive.
Fantastic. Maybe we'll catch the house this time.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
That's right.
Simon, thank you so much. Jim, appreciate it. Great to meet you both, and look forward to an update on this remarkable mystery.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard.
A new Richard Sarrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.